You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of the 2008 ICAC IDSA Joint Conference. The conference took place in Washington, D.C. from October 25th through October 28th, 2008.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, editorial director of The Body Pro. Right now, I'm in the poster session where researchers are standing in front of their posters. There's nothing like hearing the results of research directly from those who have actually conducted the research. It is these women and men who are transforming HIV treatment and care. In this podcast, the researchers will introduce themselves and then summarize their study. After their summary, I'll ask a few questions.
My name is James McKinnell. I'm an infectious disease fellow at the University of Alabama, and I wanted to talk about a little bit today about contemporary antiretroviral therapy, and specifically treatment for antiretroviral naive patients, so patients who've never had antiretroviral medications before. And two phenomena have sort of been developing over time. One is that we're learning a lot more about initial antiretroviral therapy. We look at different strategies that work, and we're actually, more comparative trials are coming out, so we're learning how to treat HIV. We're getting better at it, and we're really good at it. Life expectancy now is a lot longer. There's a second phenomenon, in as much as we've suggested now that we should test everybody for HIV. The whole world should be tested for HIV, and they should all come to therapy. They should all come to care. Well, there's an issue there. You're going to have a rapid expansion in terms of the number of patients who need treatment, who come in presenting for treatment. And we have a problem. We have the currently funded Ryan White clinics are bursting. They really have limited additional capacity to take these new patients in. So what's the potential solution? So how do I address this? I wanted to look at how do we treat antiretroviral naive patients. And I looked at two things, and one I described the treatment patterns in our clinic from 2000 to 2007. The UAB 1917 clinic is a publicly funded clinic. We have about 1,500 active patients, and we have about 7,000 patients in our electronic medical record. So I analyzed how we treated patients in each year. And I show data here from 2000 to 2007. And if you look early in the time period, from 2000 essentially to 2005, we used a lot of different medications to treat HIV. It was very complicated. And for example, in 2004, for 71 patients, we used 16 different regimens. So choosing an initial regimen has traditionally been very complicated. But starting in about 2004 or 2005, the number of regimens we were using dropped dramatically. And to the extent that in 2007, we really only had four regimens that we used. Looking at that data, we sort of wanted to look at, well, why? What's going on? Why are we only using a few regimens? So we analyzed how many patients were put on each individual regimen.
Could you describe the regimen?
Sure. So if you look, if you can see this online on figure three, you see what's called a treatment share. This is roughly the percentage of patients started on each individual regimen. So in 2003, the largest bar here is in orange. It's 3TC, AZT, efavirenz. So for most patients, that's combivir efavirenz or combivir sustiva. And initially in 2003, that represented almost 45% of patients. In 2004, a new player came to the market. It's FTC, TDF, or efavirenz. It's the green one. It's Atripla, three medications in one pill. And we liked it. From 2004, we started using it. We used it pretty frequently in 20%. But if you look in the last column, 2007 is very different. Atripla, or the three medications here, control 86% of the treatment share. So 86% of naive patients were started on Atripla.
And what's in the purple area?
The purple area is good observation. So that's the second regimen. This is what we call a protease-based regimen. And specifically, it's Truvada and boosted atazanavir. So for 96% of our patients in 2007, there's only one or two regimens that we're choosing. And these remaining 5% are actually only two additional regimens. So there's not that many medications that we're forced to manage.
By the way, what are the two additional regimens?
The two additional regimens aren't listed on the poster. They're both nevirapine-based and are probably related to a pregnant woman. It's a relatively small number of patients, but they're probably pregnant women. So if you're looking at the vast majority of patients, it's a relatively simplified treatment decision of what are you actually going to put patients on. This was relatively exciting for us because it suggests that there might be an opportunity to expand the role of primary care physicians and general practitioners in the care of these patients. Specifically, the key here is that there's two decisions that need to be made, or two things that has to happen. You need to look at a genotype for these patients. A vast majority of patients who haven't had antiretroviral therapy are completely sensitive to any regimen you want to start. If you know the treatment side effects of these two drugs, then a primary care physician, conceivably, if trained and if taught, could make that treatment decision and say, I'm going to start this patient on Atripla, or I'm going to start this patient on Truvada and a boosted atazanavir.
Meaning without a genotype?
No, I would get a genotype, but the vast majority of patients are going to be pan-sensitive.
Yeah, only 9 to 15%, I think, are supposed to have primary resistance.
Exactly. So you're talking about a small subset of the population that's going to have some resistance. It's reasonable to say, I don't know how to interpret that. Let's have an infectious disease specialist review this and help me make my decision. But for 90% of patients, if you have to decide between two drugs, it's something that's well within the realm of a general practitioner. So I took this another step. I said, well, where does the HIV practitioner fit in? You've already picked up on the genotype question and maybe some of the initial treatment decisions. That's a case-by-case scenario. You have to figure out how that works. But the second stage is, how does it work for subsequent therapy? And this is where you start looking at figure four and figure five. And these are what are called regimen trees. What I've done is I've looked at all the patients that were started on our two most popular regimens. So 3TC AZT efavirenz or combivir efavirenz, that was 135 patients. If you look at figure five, the takeaway point here is, wow, that's really complicated. It's not an easy treatment decision. There's multiple reasons for why you have to switch therapy. There's resistance issues to tackle. This is a very complicated picture, much in contrast to my relatively simplified figure three. So the idea is that over time, regimen selection for initial antiretroviral therapy has become more homogenized. 95% of patients are starting only one of two regimens. Subsequent therapy is still very complex, but maybe there's an opportunity here to incorporate general practitioners in the management of some of these patients. It's an urgent need. We need to develop access to care to these patients, and currently funded Ryan White clinics may not be the ideal answer. How do you encourage these general practitioners to become involved? Are they part of the Ryan White clinic? How does that work? But there is a need.
The interesting thing about having so many choices now is that you can really customize treatment. So if somebody has high cholesterol, high triglycerides, or those kind of lipid issues, you wouldn't give them certain kinds of regimens. And if they have other kinds of issues, you wouldn't give them, you know, so there is an opportunity here to customize.
Very astute. So what has sort of come out is that we're now looking at long-term care for patients. We want not just what's going to work today, but what's going to work in the long term. When you're picking medications like atazanavir, you're picking it for the long-term side effect profile. We're looking for tolerabilities. These are the best drugs we have to customize and to take care of patients. I'll refer to sort of one of my references here. James Willig has published it, and it's the idea of the durability of these regimens. And what we've noticed over time is that making the regimen simpler, so fewer pills. The reason why this Atripla arm has grown so much is it's one pill once a day. It's much more tolerable to patients. It's got a side effect profile, but most of our patients tolerate it. It's as customized as we can get. So this is our optimization. This is the best that we have. And we don't use inferior agents. We go right to the best we have because they last the longest, patients tolerate it the best.
This is a clinic for people who don't have insurance. So where could they go for a generalist to get free HIV care?
Well, I think the idea here is that our clinic is a mixture. We have some insured, some uninsured. But the idea here is that if we have HIV clinics that are designed to take care of patients, let's take care of the patient. Let's take care of their HIV care. Let's address the rest of their needs. Let's give them a primary care home, a place where they can get all of their care needs. And the question is not, do we have to build something else? But how can we incorporate general practitioners into this model? How do we create a place where they can get care in one location for what they need? Not to go to 16 different clinics, but how do you incorporate the general practitioner into this model?
So is that a model that is elsewhere?
I just met today with Andy Catanzaro from Unity Healthcare. Really exciting gentleman to meet with. They've actually developed this model here in Washington, whereby they have four or five infectious disease consultants that travel to each of the general medicine clinics, and they provide the HIV care. He focuses all of his efforts on these subsequent regimens. He's the gentleman that makes all the treatment regimen switches. But he doesn't take care of the day-to-day management. He doesn't do the cholesterol. He doesn't do the diabetes. He's already adopted that model. I would love to find the opportunity to look at that and look at his outcomes, compare his outcomes on a course of measures. But The issue here is that you need to make sure the patient's getting comprehensive, complete care that fits in their life. You can't make them bend to what you want. You have to provide them with what they need.
I don't know if you said this, but how many patients did you look at?
So all told, the entire enrollment spanned about 8 years. So the entire initial sample is 482 patients. So it's a pretty decently sized sample. And that for 482 naive patients, that's a serious experience with antiretroviral naive patients. It's essentially 10 providers worth of naive patients. For the subsequent regimens, obviously it's a subset. So the subsequent regimen analysis is only 205 patients.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from the 2008 ICAC IDSA Joint Conference. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/ICAAC2008.